Family is a loaded word for most of us. Family has come to symbolize a longing that many people feel for what could have been or should have been. We can look around and we often idealize what we see as family that others are a part of. Many of us think, oh, if only I had had a family like that. Or conversely, we might look and say, oh, thank God I wasn't part of that family. And we mean it. Even when families are life-giving and healthy in relationships, at best, they are very complicated. Family can be our greatest asset or our heaviest millstone. One wonders what families ever did before there were therapists. Truly. Although we know because we are living with the legacy of what families did when there were no therapists. It is a word that is full of meaning, full of confusion, and elicits a great deal of longing to the point of perhaps not being realistic. John Dominic Crossan is a biblical scholar who wrote this book called Jesus, a Revolutionary Biography. It's a different book related to Jesus' life. And in it, he writes this about the family. The family is society in miniature, the place where we first and most deeply learn how to love and be loved, hate and be hated, help and be helped, abuse and be abused. It is not just a center of domestic serenity. Since it involves power, it invites the abuse of power. And it is at that precise point that Jesus attacks it. His ideal group is, contrary to Mediterranean and indeed most human familial reality, an open one, equally accessible to all under God. The family is society in miniature. In this past week, we have been hearing a lot about family, haven't we? President Obama made a very bold statement about his evolution to the point of saying that he believes gay marriage is a good and right thing. What's been fascinating in this week is all of the comments that have come afterward. Many different people are weighing in about what their notion of family is and isn't. And we've heard again that strong desire to severely limit the definition of family, to the point where if you are a person in a marriage, male and female, and you have opted not to have children, your own family is called into question because the definition that we've been hearing about calls for the procreation of children. A very narrow definition of family has come out of it. And so, how is it that those definitions have come up when we have a passage like we have this morning where Jesus definitely says something about family, but not quite what other people are saying he said? So we have this scene where Jesus is with a crowd of people, his mother and his brothers, and some manuscripts add, and sisters, come to him. They're worried about him. They seem to think that he's losing it a little bit, and they want to see him. So they're telling the people who are right around Jesus that they want to see Jesus, demanding, in a sense, to see him. Jesus' response is one that is surprising. He does not go out and greet them with hugs and kisses. He does not say, "Oh, thank you for coming to my event. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support." Instead, he turns from them, addresses the crowd, and says, "Who is my mother and my brothers?" And then says, "Anyone who does the will of God, anyone who wants to love as God loved, anyone who follows God is my family." Completely redefines family. What Crossan says in the book that he wrote is there was a reason for that. Jesus was the patriarch in his family. He was the eldest male. He had all the power. His mother was now subservient to him, as were his younger brothers. And so part of what Crossan is saying is Jesus came to completely turn power up on its head. And so to stand there and accept his role as patriarch would have gone against everything he was trying to do. So what did he do? He laid down his place of power. He said to everyone, "Everyone who does the will of God is now called my family." He would not take up the mantle of patriarchy. We miss that somehow in the life of Jesus. And so again, we think about what's going on in the media, but we think about what's been going on for years as we've heard about family values. And I mean family values as defined by Focus on the Family and the Christian Coalition and many other groups like that. Family values relate to a nuclear family that consists of a mother and a father and children. And there is a hierarchy in that family. And each has their own role. The man is the head of the house, the head of the family. The man is the one who is responsible for supporting the family. The woman is the one that is responsible for keeping the home together, for being with the children. And of course, the children are to be seen and not heard. Those are the family values we've been hearing about for a long time. Those are not Jesus' values, I hate to say. Well, no, I don't hate to say it. I like to say. Think about what Jesus came to do. Jesus came to create a new kind of community. A community where there was no hierarchy. A community where people didn't have to be in control and use and abuse power. Jesus came to create a community where people chose to be in relationship together, and when things got difficult, chose to stay in relationship together, which meant working things out. We have the whole rest of the New Testament because people were trying to be in relationship together. all those early communities that had issue after issue after issue, and they needed so much help. What do we do about this? What about when this? But these people are trying to do this. And all the letters were written to try to help them figure out how to be in relationship together. But it was a new kind of community because it was one in which love was freely given and shared. Love given, love received, love shared. No one had to be in control. No one had to be in power. Instead, all were supposed to be on equal footing, where everyone's gifts were used and appreciated, where all worked together. We cannot think about what Jesus was trying to do with community. We cannot have a conversation about family without then looking at the church. So who knows? We still have to figure out how we got the institutional church, right? Because here we're talking about these incredible communities that Jesus was trying to begin, where there was no hierarchy or power or control. And then we think about the institutional church and have to scratch our heads. How did we get from one to the other? So let's think for a minute about this church. Ever since Duke Robinson was pastor here, one of the deepest images used for this congregation is that of family. Montclair Church family. When I met with Duke at one point early on in my time here, he let me know very kindly that in my letters in the contact, I wasn't using the word church family enough. And so he explained to me what meaning it held for him and for this congregation, which I appreciated. There's nothing like knowing when you might step on a landmine and somebody says, you know, there's one, you might want to watch out for it. But now I've been here long enough that I want to raise the question. We use that word family. Is that the word we want to use? Is that the word 10 years from now you want to have describe this church community? It might be. But let's give it some thought and consideration. What happens when we use that word in relationship to church? You can imagine for some, it brings up wonderful images. For others, it's something to have to get over in order to be comfortable here. Last Sunday, we got together for a discernment exercise and asked the questions, who is God calling us to be? What is God calling us to do? And what was amazing out of all the small groups that were meeting was that every group said something about who is God calling us to be is we are called to continue to be this deep community for one another. What is God calling us to do? God is calling us to share this amazing experience of community with other people. I was interested that the word family wasn't used. The word community was used by every single group. So we need to think about the word we want to use to describe that. What is the word we want to use to describe what it is we are together and do together, who we are together? It might be that the word family is that word. If it is, it requires constant, constant interpretation. So that those who have been abused don't come here and A, either think they'll be abused or B, put up with it if they are. Or those who have been abandoned will not think they're going to be abandoned here, or if they are, will call attention to it. Now, one of the things that we hear from people who have been around for a little while is how long it took to feel like a part of this group. Does the word family have anything to do with that? That it takes a while to feel like you can break in and make connection? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. How can we think of ourselves as an open community in such a way that people can come in with ease and connect soon and deeply? How can we do that? Part of it is figuring out why it doesn't happen for a lot of people. Maybe it's communication. Maybe it's something in the morning. Maybe we scare people by introducing them. Who knows what it is? But we need to think about it. Because what we said last week is we value this experience we have together and we want to share it. So how can we do that? And what role does that word family play? Again, Jesus was about throwing open the doors, widening the circle, expanding the definitions, not limiting, not narrowing, not closing in, not closely defining. May we follow in Jesus' footsteps. May we also add our voices to the cacophony we are hearing so that people will know that family values as they've been defined for a couple of decades are not Jesus' values. And may we be willing to speak to what Jesus' values are, how we experience them, how we live them. Amen.